Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua. What's going on?
So nice to see you.
I know, in person.
I know. Here we are in person.
We can touch.
We can, but don't. Stay over there.
Yeah.
Stay on that side of the room. There's a wall here.
Yes, the wall is invisible.
6 feet distance, which I will be maintaining for the rest of my life.
Yes. You know?
Now that we've normalized it, please stay 6 feet away from me.
Remember when we told people that you can serve face, but you just can't touch your face?
Yeah.
Then it should have been you can serve face, just cover your face.
Yeah,
is what we should
cover
said.
It. Cover it. No, I'm kidding. I'm actually looking forward to whatever con we go to next. You know, once we're able to actually get back out doing those sorts of things. I know it's starting to come back, but I keep getting I feel like the second we book something, it's gonna get canceled. You know, so it's I just feel until everything, because everything here keeps getting canceled. Was Son of Monster Palooza just got canceled? I know Elvira had posted that she was canceling all of her appearances, all of her in-person appearances for I don't know how long, but for a while. Somebody else, Doug Bradley canceled everything until 2022. So it's all these people are who were announced for different cons, they pulled out. And then I'm slowly seeing more of the cons actually shutting down too. I'm we'll come back, or, you know, conventions, you know, whatever events. So I don't know, but when they do, I will happily shake hands and hug people.
Well, it's a combination of things, right? It's either they cancel or they require proof of vaccination,
right?
Which it seems like the answer is easier, but
yeah, I was actually surprised at the ones that got canceled. Like here in California, I just, you know, because we are being pretty, I think. It seems a lot of places are requiring at least live concerts. Cause I saw Sylvanesso, last week, something like that.
As of recording,
week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And, you had to show your vaccine card or whatever, which I'm fine, whatever. I expected that. And I think the other, I've gotten, notes from other shows that are coming up. That it's the same thing. You have to you have to either show that you got a vaccine, or you have to get tested for COVID and have a negative COVID result within 72 hours or something.
So I saw Hair at the Globe, in their outdoor space. And I did get a message 2 or 3 weeks before saying that they were going to start checking vaccinations and are asking people to be masked during the show, even though it's outside,
right,
and all that. But
that surprised me. I think the Hollywood Bowl, when I go there, I think we just have to show the vaccination status or a test. I don't know if they're making people wear masks inside or not. I mean, I'm fine with it. I don't mind the mask.
They were actually... my thing is the fact that we're choosing to be there is already it's already okay, well, you're choosing to do this elective thing in the middle of a pandemic.
Right.
So if you can make it a little bit whimsical, then why not? And so because it's Hair, takes place in the 60s, they were handing out, if you wanted one, they were handing out tie-dyed face masks.
Oh,
cute. Disposable face masks that were... And so I was like, oh, that's cute.
How do you know it's the 70s if it's not tie-dyed?
Yeah.
Or the 60s?
Exactly.
Hair set in the 60s, right?
60s, yeah.
Yeah, how do you know? So I'm glad that they were doing that, just so everybody felt...
Yeah.
Part of the show.
Exactly.
They were like, put this mask on, take all the rest of your clothing off.
I know. Exactly. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And it was I went with my friend Colin, who I usually see musicals with, specifically at the Globe. I see stuff with him. And so we hadn't seen each other since before.
Wow. Yeah.
And so we had dinner before. It was just a beautiful night.
Mm-hmm. Say before again.
Before. On test day, as they say in Espanol.
No, well, that's great. I'm glad that you enjoyed the show. Sounds like it was a good production.
Yes, yeah, very good production.
Everybody sounded good. Lots of good singing.
Lots of great singing. Yeah.
Were you familiar with Hair before? Had you seen it before?
I never seen the stage production or the film, but I am familiar with a particular album. So back in 2006, there was an album that was released by a bunch of Broadway actors for the Actors Fund of America, and it was various Broadway actors doing Hair. So there's like Lea Delaria singing Donna, and Anna Gasteyer singing Dead End, and Rola Sparza singing Hair. Like, you know, all of these, a veritable who's that of Broadway, right, singing different stuff. And so I was very familiar with that recording. So I knew most of the music, if not all.
Very cool.
But to see it on stage, because I know it's a different theatrical experience, and I know it's vastly different from the movie. So it was nice to have that context, and super relevant now. It was actually really interesting, because in the second act, it's all like, it's very much like anti-war propaganda. Yeah. And there was a guy who was sitting a couple rows in front who was wearing like a black t-shirt that said veteran on the back. And it was like, it was 9/10. So it was the day before the 20th anniversary of 9/11. So I can only imagine what his whole experience was like of watching Hair.
Yeah.
So
curious. Yeah. Curious about that.
Very.
But he didn't leave. He stayed. He was there for the show.
He stayed through the second act.
Well, there we go.
So, you know, and he was closer than I was. So means that he spent more. So,
hey,
he wanted to see Hair.
He wanted to. He wanted to be there. Well, how cool. I'm glad that you got that experience. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, when we went to the show, it was at Soma here in San Diego, which is an indoor venue, so they had requested everybody have masks on. I'd say there was 30-40% compliance with that, maybe. I don't know. I did not see the whole venue. We got there very early, of course, and we were right against the stage, so, you know, I only really saw the people in my immediate vicinity, but I mean, I guess if you like took a sample of them, I'd say, yeah, maybe 40% of us, 30% of us actually wore our masks through the whole
show. In addition to being vaccinated and tested, right?
Yeah. Well, not tested. It was vaccine or
mask.
Yeah. Well, both. You had to have a mask, and you either had to vaccinate or have a vaccination card or whatever, proof you were vaccinated, or a COVID test.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we didn't have a COVID test because we have our vaccines, but we did wear masks through the whole show. But I mean, it was very uncomfortable, I would guess, for some people, because it's like, I mean, it's a hot.
I saw the videos. Show. Yeah. Well, so I didn't tell you this. So I told you that someone I follow on Instagram was there.
Oh, yeah.
But it was the comedy writer Debbie Adijuibe, who's one of the Gilmore guys.
Oh, okay.
So he was in the back, and he was like, Sylvan, he posted, I was like, shit, he's tagging Sylvan Esso at the same concert that you were at. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That would have been fun.
That would have been fun.
Find, you know, if worlds had collided. Yeah, but I was, because we were so far front at Soma, either side of the stage has doors that go out to the outside of the place. So mm-hmm. There's like one side is like the loading area, and the other side, I think, is just like an outdoor area for, I don't know if it was accessible from the outside to everybody or if it was just like for the musicians or crew. Either way, they had both of those doors open and these like big fans on stage. So there was a lot of fresh air like flowing through the show for where we were. But I mean, you really, to benefit from that, you would have had to been like exactly where we were.
That was probably more for the performers than anything, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. But we definitely got the, you know, because I mean, I like danced my face off for like 2 straight hours. I was like soaking wet, you know, by the time I left because we were just dancing so much. Not literally, but pretty. I mean, I was pretty sweaty. But we kept getting these like lovely big bursts of like, you know, breeze coming through. And because they had both doors, it was like creating this nice cross breeze, plus like the fans on stage like pulling air. Oh, it was very nice. So I actually did not suffer as much as I think probably others did with their masks on, because it, you know, we got quite a bit of air flow through.
So let me ask you this. How are your knees the day after?
I know, actually, my calf muscle, I've been like, it's kind of sore, but I don't know if that's just, I've been biking a lot more too because of class. I'm biking to class every day, so I'm spending, you know, 20 to 30 minutes like a day on my bike, which I know, like, somebody listens, it's like, well, that doesn't sound like much, but it does for my lazy ass. Mm-hmm. So after not really, because I mean, since January, I've basically sat in this room, you know, doing all my classes online. Yeah. So I have not been active. I've not been really walking or doing anything. And plus not having concerts to go to, which, you know, you go to 2 or 3 concerts a month, you know, bounce my face off. Like, you know, I'm just not as active as I was. And I'm very badly motivated to be, you know, I was trying, like, you know, I talked to my brother because I wanted to know if, like, he had any suggestions of any, like, you know, videos or anything, like, you know, that had kind of like low impact kind of stuff that I could do in the morning before I, like, head out for the day. So I was doing that for a little bit. I'm just not, what do you call it? Not diligent,
consistent.
Motivated, consistent, all those are words that work. You know, I just, yeah, it's really hard for me to, like, force myself to do it. I wish I, like, could figure out somebody that has, like, a similar schedule to me and we could, like, go for walks together or, you know, do something, like, together.
You could make a friend.
I could. That could be very dangerous nowadays. You never know. They might become like a single white female situation.
I mean, Joshua, we're gay men of a certain age who, like, have, like, had literal sex with strangers on the internet.
Right. But that doesn't involve, like, an emotional connection. You know, you're saying, you know, you're talking about, like, getting somebody and having them come over on a regular basis and get to know each other. That's different. That's, like, you know, that's intimate. This isn't just, you know, this isn't sex.
It's exercise.
That's true. That is kind of like exercise. Maybe that's what we need to do. We just need to, like,
have, you know, more sex.
Have, yeah, every single day. Just have a line of oh my gosh, this is like, this is just.
Oh, see, you can hire someone that'll be your morning prostitutional.
Yeah. No, but, like, you know, some of our friends who've been on the show before, mm-hmm. you know, they all, like, talked to, like, just this morning or last night, one of my friends who has not been on the show but was talking to on our, like, chat, and it was like, you know, oh, I'm going to go hike tomorrow morning. And, like, you know, somebody else was like, oh, yeah, I'll go with you. And I'm like, oh, that's adorable. But I just don't, like, I didn't have that.
Oh, but, like, girl, I'm not about to be, I don't walk children in nature, okay?
I know, right. Well, that's the thing, though. Like, I should really say yes to those kinds of things and at least go, you know, like, for the walk or whatever, for the fresh air. I mean, especially because, you know, I've been telling you about, like, my sleeping problems I'm having. And, you know, so it's like, it's clear that I need to find a way to, like, oxygenate, you know, more often. But I'm just like,
oh,
no,
I definitely do too.
I'm just going to sit here.
If I live closer, I would go with you.
Yeah. I will say through the week, I feel really good because I'm biking so much. And, because, you know, it takes me like 10, it's a 10 to 15 minute bike ride or so from here to class, then back, same mm-hmm. 10 to 15. And a lot of times I'll do that 3 or 4 times a day because I'll go to, like, a class, I'll come back home, read something, have a rest, go back to campus, come back, have lunch, go back to campus. So it's like I'm on my bike a lot. So, like, through the week I feel really good. I'm like, oh, it's just I'm not doing it on days. Like, if I did it every day, regardless of if I have class on campus, because I only have class on campus 3 days a week.
Yeah.
So there are 2 days four days of the week I do nothing but sit. So, what was the point of all this? I don't even remember how we got off on this. This is terrible. Dancing. The whole being lazy. Yes. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. So thankfully, now that things are kind of slowly coming back, you know, I'm going out to more concerts where I'm dancing. I'm trying to, like, you know, walk a little bit. Because sometimes, you know, even just going out, like, to the store or something, it's like, well, at least I'm getting something. You know what I mean? Getting up off the chair. Because it really had, I mean, it even before that, when I was working, I was still in an office.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like I was very active then either.
Yeah. Well, okay. So here, your motivation. Here, I'm going to give you your motivation to exercise.
Excellent. Give it to me, Sandra.
I love giving people fitness advice. mm-hmm. Especially when I eat, like, a bucket of chicken or whatever. I'm like, you should just do this.
Yeah.
You know, cut out carbs. Mm-hmm. Your motivation is to go in the morning to go to, like, you know, a lake or something, like Lake Murray or something like that, and walk. Because in Law and Order, that's usually when you find the body. It's like, you'd be the one to find the bodies.
Yes, you're trying to get me out here stumbling across crime scenes.
Exactly. I'm trying to get you to discover that hooker in the dumpster, or, you know, yes. the man in the bushes.
Yeah. Huh. I have not thought about that.
There you go. There's your motivation.
Yeah, I'm going to pitch that to the rest of the group. I'm going to say, does anybody want to join me on walks just on the off chance we can be, like, a part of a story that gets adapted by Law and Order?
Yes.
Because is Law and Order the one that's always, it's always ripped from the headlines. Yes. That, I want that to be me. You know?
Every time they say ripped from the headlines, I just, like, I picture like a giant hand.
Right. It's like ripping it right from that line. Yeah. what else has been going on? We've been watching American Horror Story.
Yes.
So we were going to chat about that. This season, I don't know. I mean,
Well, we're going to do like an episode, right? Of the first, like, are we going to split it in half or are we going to do the whole thing as one episode?
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
I guess it depends on how it all comes together.
Okay.
But at least just for now, we can just chat like what we think so far.
Okay.
I was really excited when they first announced it because it was like, it's a double feature. We're doing two stories. So it's like, you know, one story is going to have six episodes. One's going to have four. I'm like, well, that's great. That's not a lot of space to fuck it up. You know, it's like, maybe we can keep it tight, keep the story tight, keep mm-hmm. us all on the same page. Mm-hmm. So I'm enjoying it. It is pretty cohesive so far. Like, I there hasn't been anything like, what the fuck is this about? You know, so I've been enjoying that. What are we on? Episode 5, which I haven't seen because we did a weird thing this year where we like staggered it. Because
we're getting old.
Yeah. Everybody, like, nobody wants to be at the house at like midnight.
Remember when we used to do that? Remember when like I would stay over?
Yeah.
And it would be like, oh, I have to be at work early, so I'm going to stay over because we're watching Horror Story at 10.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
I know. Yeah. And it was even like 10:30 or 10:45 we'd started because we wanted to fast forward through commercials. So, yeah, I know. It's bonkers. Now it's like we watch the first, because we always show the previous episode. Mm-hmm. So it's like at 7 so that everybody could be leaving by 9, you know, by the time we finish the next episode. Yep.
Or depending on who stays, because like generally I haven't come every week. I'm kind of trading off because Jimmy Kins has started bowling again. And so his bowling night is Wednesday. So I've decided I'm going to switch off.
Yeah. Well, that's all right.
Yeah.
I like that. You're being supportive of two friends at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So because of the way we've been showing it this year, we're a little behind because we decided to stagger it. Because they premiered two episodes.
Yes, they premiered two episodes, the first one. And you, I messed up. I totally messed up on that because I thought that it started at 9. And it was going to be two episodes starting at 9. And you said, no, it's two episodes starting at 10.
Yeah.
So I missed the first one. But you only showed that first episode. And then the following week, you did the first episode plus the second one.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's created like a stagger just so that everybody can kind of get out like early and go about their day. Plus, I do have class on Thursday mornings. And it's like my counseling practice class, counseling skills. And so, yeah, I can't really like stay up all night. You know, like, I have to be, like, rested and ready for empathetic conversations.
Oh.
You know? Providing space. So I can't be, like, you know.
Holding that
fuck
space.
Fuck this shit. Yeah. Fuck this 9 o'clock in the morning. Bullshit. But what do you think of the story so far?
Oh, it's... So I must admit
Red
that,
Tide. Red Tide.
Red Tide. I must admit that I am actually a week ahead of where the things are because... It's so good.
Yeah, you're enjoying it.
I mean, really enjoying it. It's an interesting conversation into talent and like and who is and is not talented, and also like dealing with the unknown in that regard. Right?
Yeah. So, no. Totally. That's actually a really good point. Yeah.
But honestly, like, give me Angelica Ross all day long.
Yeah, I'm enjoying her character, the chemist. Yeah, yeah, she's cool.
It's like, what's your name? I'm the chemist. I'm like,
just make it out to the chemist.
Yeah. Her name isn't like, you know, Angelina or Keisha or, you know, Sybil or whatever. It's the chemist.
The chemist.
When your character title can be like your profession. Mm-hmm. So like, what would you be? You'd be the counselor.
There we go.
You know, I'd be the podcaster or something.
I like it. Yeah. That's what I'm going to refer to you from now on.
It's the podcaster.
This is Joe, the podcaster. And then, you know, because we're at conventions with other podcasters, they'd be like, yes, yeah, so.
So,
and
everyone has one.
I know that's kind of what I always say now when people, you know, when I like, I'm like, oh, you know, I have a podcast. It's like, who doesn't, right?
Yeah.
But that's okay, because I'm for all the content. Lots of delicious things to listen to. It's so funny. So friend of ours and a published author, Laura Preble, you know, Laura, she's a delight. And she sent me a message. She sent me a DM saying, asking like what I thought of the new season of American Horror Story. Cause you know, obviously, and she's not the only one. Lots of people have kind of reached
out. People want to know what you have to say.
Right. Every horror thing. Oh my gosh. Do you know how many people tag me in that? Like watch 10 horror movies for $1,300 or whatever.
I know.
Everybody. I got so many people sent me that and I'm just like, I've seen all these movies.
Did you apply?
No. I'm not no.
We've also seen most of them.
Yeah, well, and it's like the study, like it's like we want to like attach you to like a heart monitor and like, you know, win it, like, and I'm just like, I'm not the right person for that.
Well, I mean, that assumes that you're actually alive.
So. Right. Well, yeah, there's that. But it's also it's like that I would jump or something mm-hmm. or be scared, and none of the movies are movies I haven't seen, like a mm-hmm. bunch of them I've even seen several times, so it's just like no, this,
so you're gonna have like the complete stasis. We're gonna watch Hereditary yeah. and it's gonna be like, you know,
yeah, they're gonna pull it out like, this guy like laughed at really inappropriate times, do you see this?
He's barely registering a heartbeat, it's so faint.
But anyways, which I love, because again, I mean, I adore that people think of me, so it's so great. But it's just, and it's that time of year where also where like we're starting into spooky season, so like more stuff's gonna be posted like that. And
oh my god, give the people who don't like horror, give that to them.
I know, like our friend, like she's the one who should get $1,300 yes. to like brave through, you know, some of these horror movies, the jump right out of her skin. Some of them.
Oh my gosh,
but. But she had reached out, Laura reached out and had sent me this message asking like what I thought of the pill and would I take it. And so, first of all,
well, context, right? So,
oh, right.
So, well. In spoiler alert, this whole episode, spoiler alert, by the way.
That's
so,
true. Yeah.
In Red Tide, the first half of the double feature for American Horror Story, there's a black pill that gives people who are creative by nature. It kind of unlocks that creative part of their brain, creative part of yeah. their mind, and you know, makes it so that way they become super prolific in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
The trade-off is that they get angry and crave human blood, or yeah. crave blood.
Yeah, they're basically vampires.
Yeah,
kind of. I mean, I guess that it's a different vampire than. It's scene in Hotel.
Yeah, it's a different kind of vampirism altogether. But it's, and I actually really appreciate that this is a whole commentary on like, it's kind of twisting the vampire legend because they're not even saying the word vampire.
Yeah.
They're just saying like, oh, they drink blood.
Well, Sarah Paulson's character make, I know she called them bloodsuckers. Does she not use vampire? Maybe
I don't.
Not.
I don't think anyone's ever said the okay. word vampire.
I'd have to like go back and look and watch. But yeah, I mean, they're not. It's definitely not like, oh, it's a vampire season, you know. But
yeah, because there's no immortality attached to it. The yeah. only immortality, I guess, is in the work that it is created.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That they're becoming, you know, successful authors and successful musical writers. You know, librettists. And television, movies, all that kind of stuff. So it's basically saying like, everybody creative in Hollywood, maybe it's like a comment on adrenochrome. this is like, you know, you got to eat, you know, babies in order to be successful, to be a Hollywood elite, as we see as a baby does.
A little baby.
Yes, meet a questionable end. But so they had asked me, and it's like, so like, the flip side of it, dear listener, if you're not watching American Horror Story, is that if you're not a creative person, really, if you take the pill thinking that you have talent and you don't have talent, well, like turns you into like a mindless monster kind of thing. You like lose all your hair and become like a.
Yeah, because it's interesting because Angelica Ross, the chemist, says that if you take it and you don't have talent, you basically, your anger manifests as you're angry that you don't have talent.
Right.
And
right.
then you just.
Being faced with the reality.
Yeah, being faced with the reality that you are talentless is too gruesome to bear. And so you end up being this, like, you know, mindless, thirsty. Kind of weird zombie
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, like a wraith kind of thing.
Yes,
yeah.
like a wraith.
It's weird, yeah, just kind of soulless. But, yeah, so she had sent me and asked me what I thought, and I said, well, first of all, like, I don't really want to take it because, yeah, there is always the fear of, like, you know, like, there was a meme going around for a while that was like, are you really talented or do people just think you're attractive? Like, are you really talented or are you just, like, a white man? Like, are you really talented or, you know, so it was like...
Which is so true, though.
No, yeah, absolutely. I'm not just, I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of talented, beautiful people and there are plenty of, you know, untalented, like, you know, beautiful people, white people, whatever. I don't know. I think, but the point of it is like, yeah, it's like questioning, you know, like who is talented, who is truly talented and has success and who doesn't. And like, you know, when you want to compare and like talk about that. And so like, that's kind of a horrifying thought, you know, when like you're somebody who makes music and goes out, it's like, well, oh my gosh, like, are people just being nice? Like people just kind of come to support you because you're their friend, or people like listen to the show because they're our friend and not because they think we're funny or smart.
Which, thank you to both those people.
Right. I mean, I'm happy for any listens we get, but it's, you know, but it is, it's like, that's kind of a terrifying thing of like, you know, I don't know, am I actually talented or am I just like, you know, and I mean, I guess not just me, like, you know, I'm not having some like crisis of like, you know what I mean? Cause it's like, again, I think everybody can be talented and creative in their own ways and find avenues and find channels for it. So, you know, I'm not like having any like real crisis of, you know what I mean? Like,
of faith in your own.
But it is kind of a creepy thought. It's like, well, yeah, what if you could unlock, like, you know, cause I definitely feel that sometimes where like, if I'm working on a piece or writing something, or thinking about something, I sometimes feel like I'm just on the precipice of like making that connection or like writing songs, for instance, like, you know, cause like you'll sit and you'll write a song and it'll like just come out and you're like, oh man, like where did that come from all of a sudden, you know? And why did I write that right now and not 10 years ago, not 20 years ago, you know, or 10 years in the future or whatever. So, and that's like these amazing like moments of like, you know, that kind of muse feeling. But then there are other times where it's like, I'm sitting with all these thoughts, like, why can't I form them into a song? Or why can't I write like a little essay about something? Like, it takes a while. So it's like that weird kind of feeling of like, if you could clear that fog all the time.
Yeah, if you could unblock it.
Yeah, like what would that be like? You know,
I feel that way a lot.
But would I want to eat infants in order to sustain that?
Like, well, no, you don't have to eat infants. You can just eat other people.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, obviously some of the people are... I'm going to, like, the most depraved kind of thing. You know, it's the same, like, with the vampirism thing. It's like, well, do I want to eat people? I don't want to kill people, you know? But again, if it's, like, True Blood and they're, like, volunteering and, you know, having a good time and living, I don't know, maybe.
So I think this is an interesting comment. I think this show is coming at an interesting time because right now we're in the middle of like the impending strike that's happening in entertainment industry. So for those of you who don't know, go and like look up IATSE, right? IATSE or whatever they're calling it. And it's basically like everyone behind the scenes of big productions are fighting for like basic right. Yeah, they're fighting to basically have like new streaming services be taken off of new media so that way they can get the same protections that their unions afford them for those types of series. And the stories on, I forget the Instagram, we'll have to find it, we can post it, but like the stories are so fascinating as to like the things that these people are going through in order to like work on it. And it's an interesting commentary because like, if you could just have your creative, dreams unlocked, but like there are tons of suffering at the hands of that, would you do it?
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, that's great. That's a really good point. Like when we're talking about like those cultural connections in horror, even though this kind of was written and filmed and all that kind of before all this happened, it's always seems to be a relevant conversation.
Yeah, always.
In, you know, in creative spaces. Sarah Paulson actually shared, I don't know who it was, I'd have to go back and look at the actual tweet, but somebody wrote like, it was like another actor was like backing the strike up. Like, yeah, you don't have me without them. Like, and that's like what's really fucked up about those kinds of conversations. It's like, I remember when I was in high school, and I did like high school drama. I didn't like acting. I would act because there weren't a lot of guys. So of course you were guaranteed like a good part if you like showed up and auditioned. But I always was like, that's fine, but I really want to be on the crew. Like I want to be the stage manager, assistant stage manager. I want to like help out with that kind of stuff. So I, for a long time, I was actually...
You want to be the queer with a headset making the world go around.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I, you know, I enjoyed doing that part. And I did quite a few shows that way before I even actually was ever like in a show. And one of the women on there, she was a senior. I think I was a freshman that year, and she gave me like the Techie Bible, which is this thing that just, I don't know, I think it was like passed around at the time. She made like a big deal about giving it to me. It was kind of cool. I still have it somewhere in a box in the garage because I kept all these years. It was kind of cool. But it was just basically like, without us, there's going to be a bunch of naked people standing in the dark yelling lines at each other. You know, like there is no show without like all the people behind the scenes who are building it or doing the lights or doing all that. So any of this like dismissiveness of like the work they do, I don't understand it. You know, maybe that's just like my like communal nature of like, you know, we're all here to like make a project happen. So whether it's,
but like the, but we talk about this a lot when you talk about like the importance of the arts, right? So
yeah.
Like arts funding is always the first thing to go to get cut.
Yeah.
But like when you think about how many hundreds of people, outside of the cast, outside of the people you see on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think here, case in point, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, Marvel film, employed 6,000 people in the course of the production from all stages. And that's like a fraction of that were the people who were actually on camera.
On screen, yeah.
Yeah, it's like everyone who, all the individual stars have at least a team of like, what, 100 people maybe attending to them. And then you have everyone from like the person whose job it is to Photoshop the tree to the people who are the, you know, in the production shop and this and the practical effects and all that stuff. So there, I mean, if you think about a Broadway touring company, right, employs like union truckers because they have to move these sets from city to city and sometimes internationally.
Yeah.
And they don't think about, that's the thing, is like we don't think about that. And so we're in the space right now, especially because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And where the rules had to be very strict in order for movies to continue and filming had to take place outside of the United States in order to get things going. But like, why wouldn't you want to, again, in this age of COVID, imagine better and come out of it with like a better understanding? This is what what people are fighting for in Broadway as well, with like especially like Black and Brown actors on Broadway and all of that. And now it's making its way towards the folks who actually literally make things run.
Right.
The Weakest Link, right? So when I was on The Weakest Link, all of the people that I dealt with that were like were not Jane Lynch, which was most of the people, were...
So you're saying that most of the people that work at The Weakest Link are not Jane Lynch.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
This is a fact, everybody.
Bonkers.
I was super duper nice to every single one of them.
Yeah.
Because the thing is like they're the ones who I'm like, they have the ability to make me look shiny or to make me look good. Like the hair and makeup girl who like she's like, you're just a little shiny. And I was like, I know. I told her, I was like, I know, I run oily. So she always came and she always like, you know, patted me down or whatever. And I was like, thank you so much. Like I said, thank you so much to every single person that was there, because these are the people who make the world go round.
Right. Within those realms. Yeah.
Because then you get like the fucking people like who dress, what's his name? Sean Spicer on Dancing with the Stars. And they think that, oh, let's give him this like green, like, you know, like a flowy cha-cha-cha outfit. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, that's because the gays rule. And, you know, we want to make him look like an idiot. Anyway, please, let's move on.
The point is that American Horror Story this season seems to be saying something again.
And when you get to the episode that aired this week, I probably want to come back and watch it with you because I thought it was so good. Like, I thought it's starting to do that thing that American Horror Story does where it's like the penultimate episode of the season is wrapping things up.
Yeah.
And so this one is the penultimate episode of this story. And so it starts to wrap things up a little bit and escalate in very specific ways. But it's so good in how they're doing it. And it's very satisfying. I haven't felt this way about an American Horror Story in a long time.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to see it.
I hope I'm not overselling it.
It's all right if you are, because I'll be thrilled either way. I'm sure I've been enjoying the season, and so yeah, I'm looking forward to whatever happens next. So with that being said, we will take a quick break, and then we will be back to chat about the new James Wan movie, Malignant.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey...
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, ugh, the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-o!
From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
All right, welcome back. So, yes, this week we are, I'm so excited because we're gearing up for, like, you know, official spooky season. We got all the movies picked that we're going to do coming up here in October. So that's super fun. And so we thought this week we would kind of keep it moving like we did with Candyman on our last episode, that we would do another new film that just came out this past week or so on HBO Max, week or two now.
And theaters.
And theaters, yes. Oh, it was released September 10th. And it is the 20th, so 10 days ago. Malignant, new James Wan film that is, I think he wrote along with Akilah Cooper and Ingrid Bisou. I think that's his wife. Yes, Ingrid Bisou, B-I-S-U. That's his wife. So they wrote it together, worked on it together, and... James Wan, obviously, you know, saw Conjuring, Insidious, everything. Anything not Blumhouse, it seems, is James Wan. or everything that, like, James, no, Jason Blum. Anything Jason Blum isn't doing.
James Wan.
There's James Wan. Yeah. Oh my gosh, too many J's. All right, so we got Annabelle Wallace starring, Maddie Hassan, George Young, Jacqueline McKenzie. What else? What
no
else?
Names. No real names.
Yeah, there's actually not really. I mean, the only person I recognized was McKenna Grace, the young version of the main character. I've seen her in other things.
What have you seen her in?
Hold on one second. She was in Captain Marvel. She was in I, Tonya. She played the young Tonya Harding. That's where I really recognized her from. She's going to be in the new Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Oh, okay.
What else? Oh, she was the young Sabrina in Chilling Adventures of Sabrina in one of the episodes of Midwinter's Tale.
Oh.
Yeah. So I recognized her face, but she's like the only one. Nobody else. I didn't really know any of the other actors. Oh, Zoe Bell. I did recognize Zoe Bell, the stunt woman, and she was in...
Which she's like super maked up. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Made up. I don't know.
It took me a bit to...
Made up.
Yeah, she turned around and there was like, she caught the light. Just like a way that I went, oh my God, that's Zoe Bell. She's played Scorpion, a woman in a jail sequence. And she does. She looks like she fell right out of like an 80s biker gang, lesbian.
Well,
biker.
I loved her in, because I keep thinking about her character in The Hateful Eight.
Oh, right.
Because she's just so cheerful and happy in that movie. So.
All right. So, Malignant, HBO Max. This is a Warner Brothers movie or pictures under New Line Cinema. It's so funny because the reviews, like anything, again, and that's kind of what we're doing today. We just sat and watched it, so we're just kind of giving our thoughts, even though we're not a review podcast, but it seems like we are sometimes. Sometimes we are.
I think the more we say it, the more we become
right,
the opposite.
Right. This would be a field trip episode, typically, but we did watch in the comfort of my home with some Chinese, delicious Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
It was lovely, actually.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. anyways, my point was about reviews. That's like, I'm seeing both sides, like everything. People really loved it. People really hated it. Same with Candyman last week. Same with every movie before. Like, people... This is the worst fucking thing I ever saw.
We can't agree.
Or it's the best thing I ever saw. So let's start with how you felt, Joe.
Oh, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Enjoyed it?
I enjoyed it a lot. I probably would watch it again.
Really?
It was Well, because the thing is, too, is that you know me, I like a lot of action. So this definitely in the later half of the film, like, felt like it just picked up.
That's
and
true.
Started to
yeah.
move super, super quickly. And it's like, oh my God, what are we getting into? And then it gets really bloody and just delicious.
That's true. Yeah. It's almost 2 hours long, but I did not feel it. Like, at first I did. At first I was like, the beginning pacing was a little slower, and then it did really pick up. But go ahead. But yeah.
No, exactly that. And so it's just like, oh my gosh, we're picking it up. And then it does get a little predictable mm-hmm. in very specific parts, in very mm-hmm. specific ways. I think towards the end I was like, I bet it's this. And it, you know, ended up being.
Yeah. And then like that. A second later, somebody go, this! And this,
yeah. So, but overall, I enjoyed it. It would have been fun to watch it in a theater with
yeah,
a crowd.
With a crowd,
but
yeah.
It was also, but like, even though it would have been fun to do that, it's equally as fun to do it in your home and where we can just like, you know, talk over it. And,
yeah. Have those moments. Yeah, I enjoyed it overall. I saw the twist, the jaw-dropping twist, as every clickbait article says. I keep seeing that, you know, jaw-dropping twist.
I didn't know if it was jaw-dropping.
No, it was not jaw-dropping at all if you've ever seen a damn horror film, and that's always kind of the thing. So I guessed the.
So again, spoiler. Spoilers.
Yeah, so the story, so first of all, like the beginning, I really enjoyed the way it opened. Like we were saying, it was very Stranger Things. It's takes us back to 1993, because now that's forever ago, like we've talked about, almost 30 years ago. Yeah. So that's now like the before times in movies.
But like, you ever notice how like that 1993 looks a lot like 1983? It looks a lot like 1973.
It is kind of weird. Yeah. Like how
our nostalgia is all blurring together.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the videotapes and stuff like that, I'm just like, wow, this is like, yeah.
Oh yeah. The scene where like the mom's putting a videotape in, it's like, it shows you the inner workings of
the
cassette.
It's so reverential. Yeah.
It's like, remember how videotapes work.
Yeah. Probably the majority, at least the underage audience that will probably watch this has never touched a VHS tape. So I'm sure they were like, what is that? So it's like, in case you don't understand, this is how it works. So that, yeah. So anyway, so it starts out with that, which is very nice. You know, it's like a research hospital in chaos because the patient is like losing their mind.
It's an Arkham Asylum.
It does look very Arkham. That's true. I mean, this is why like hospitals, like mental health facilities, things like that have such a bad rap, because that's what people think of when they see them.
I honestly thought we were watching like Batman Forever. Like I thought Joel Schumacher was at the helm of this.
Right.
Because of the way it starts and it's like an unknown. It was like the beginning of Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Totally.
I was expecting like that nurse to be shooter, shooter.
That's. Yeah, that is exactly what it was like. Just chaotic. So, you know, we're introduced to like the patient or whatever, and then it flashes forward, and then we're dealing with what's her name?
Madison,
because her parents saw Splash, obviously. Mm. That's how people got that name.
Is the mermaid's name in Splash Madison?
Yeah, well, her name is something that can't be pronounced in
her name
English.
Is,
yeah, yeah. So she picks a name and she sees Madison, like Avenue or whatever. Isn't it set in New York? I think so.
Probably.
I haven't seen Splash in forever, although I love Splash because I love mermaids. But that movie is responsible for that name. Like,
oh, okay.
It shot up after. Like,
are you going to go see the
what
remake?
What year was that? 80. What year was Splash? 88? Do you remember, Joe?
No, I
don't remember when it came out?
No, I was probably not born yet.
Actually, 84, that's right, it's older. So yeah, the year I was born.
Yeah.
I actually, yeah, I was
wow,
not alive yet.
The year you were
yet.
Born was...
March 9th.
The year you were born was Nightmare on Elm Street and Splash.
Yep. So anyways, point is...
You could have been named Madison.
I would go see a remake of Splash.
No, they're doing one.
Because they'll have a mermaid in it, so I'll go see it. But I love mermaid shit.
But they're doing it, and I think... The mermaid is going to be Channing Tatum.
I heard that, but it's been like 4 or 5 years, I feel like, since that story started circulating with Rebel Wilson. I just don't know if that's actually happening, but we'll see. If they make it, I'll go see it. the point is that, no, like, Madison became, like, a very popular name after that. So I'm just like, obviously, these parents are falling into that. 27 years later. So Madison Lake, living in Seattle. And how do we know it's Seattle?
Space Needle.
The needle right
she
away.
Drives right by the public market.
Yeah, like. Everything. It's like they make sure you know. It's just like anytime you're in New York in a film, if you can't see the Statue of Liberty in the background, mm-hmm. are you really there? Is it New York? Probably yeah. not. You know, if you're not in Times Square, nothing else exists. anyways, so poor Madison. She's pregnant. So right away, as soon as she walked in with her little pregnant belly, I went, uh-oh, not a good sign. Pregnant woman in a horror film. We've traced this quite a few times from Rosemary's Baby to most recently False Positive. Mm-hmm. So we knew right away.
Not going to be good.
It's not good. It's not a good situation. And then her dumb ass, awful husband beats her up. Yeah. Terrible. Knocks her head into a wall, and it's like, while complaining that because she's had all these other miscarriages, which you they hint at there, and then you find out later that it's like, what, three miscarriages? Three, yes. So four with this baby, I think.
Yes, four.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's had like all these miscarriages, so it's like he's brutalizing her because he's mad that she's like had miscarriages.
Yeah, he says, so, like, I can't bear to see, what did he say? I was getting food at this time, but I heard him say, like, I can't bear to see, like, my child die inside.
Right, another one of my children, like, die. And yeah, it was horrible. And then he, like, beats her up. I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? This is awful. So that was really uncomfortable. But then he, like, dies right away. So that was lovely.
A very gruesome death.
Really gruesome. I know when they showed his, like, neck all bent up, that was delightful. So, yeah, I love to see that. You love to see it. But... you know, she also gets knocked out by this intruder. There's like a, you know, a shadowy figure. It's the shape at the beginning. Knocks her out as well, and she wakes up in a hospital, and she's miscarried again, so very sad. So the movie just starts right off in this, like, really dark kind of bummer fucking place, for sure. And then the rest of it is just kind of her having, like, visions of these other murders as this, like, shadowy figures going about.
It's like lucid dreaming.
Yeah, lucid dreams almost, which was really neat. I did really enjoy. We kept talking about that, the way that they portrayed that as, like, you know, she's, like, standing in her house and then all the walls would, like, melt and morph around her into this other space. So she was, like, you know, and, you know, as the film progresses, you find out that all the people getting murdered are, like, tied to that, you know, hospital in the beginning of it, tied to, like, a particular patient, a particular experience. And, you know, so it was just, that was really, really cool how they did that, the melding of, like, the set pieces together. It was very, very cool.
And also had, like, it did have, like, a Suspiria, like, color scheme. It's very dramatic. Lots of, like, tight shots on eyes and bright colors. Because you said you saw somewhere where it's, like, inspired by Giallo, right?
I thought I read that, yeah, I was trying to find the direct quote from, yeah, James Wan's new horror movie is officially titled Malignant. So this is a bit, when was this published? This is, oh, it's from 2019. But I think somewhere there was a quote from him. Oh, where is it?
Which it had, like, all of the markings of Giallo. Like, it had, it's supernatural.
Yeah, I think there's a quote somewhere, I thought, from him directly that he, that's what he was trying to do, was do something a little in the line of, like, a Giallo film. Which at the beginning, I kind of got, like, you know, like you were saying with the, like, some of the lighting choices, especially at the beginning with all that red lighting, like, flooding everything. It felt very Suspiria, very Dario Argento, you know.
The way that, like, the cool camera work of, like, her running through the house, but it's taking place from above.
Yeah, like, almost like a maze, yeah. like a mouse, you know, in mm-hmm. a maze kind of thing. Yeah, that was really cool. Like, yeah, definitely reminded me of Suspiria and other, like, films of that nature. You're right, a lot of the close-ups of the eyes and just the way the lighting and all of that. Even the way she kind of looked with her hair and stuff gave me, what's her name, Jessica... Is it Jessica Harper? Is that her mm-hmm. name?
With, like, with the knife and the, like, blue and the red.
Yeah, that whole sequence.
One of my Jessica favorite Harper. Images from a horror film is that, like, the blue and the red and the knife right up, like, right under her chin.
Yeah. Yeah, so it definitely had that for, I'd say, the beginning of it, the first, like, third of the film. Then it kind of morphed into much more of, like, a traditional, like, kind of slashery type film in a way. Although not, like, a traditional slasher, but still. It kind of had those sort of effects where it was like, oh, you know, this person's going about their life, and, oh, there's the guy standing behind you, you know. Kind of had those moments, which can be very giallo. I mean, there are, you know.
Yeah, it was really, like, I think the SAT word to use this is histrionic. Like, it was just very magnified in a way that we hadn't seen. Because, like, a lot of horror films that we watch that are on the newer side of it, there's some subtlety. And this was definitely, like, they painted with a very heavy hand, intentionally. But it, and for me, it worked. Like, it was kind of refreshing to see, like, a call or... like a menacing phone call from a demon, you know, from a disembodied voice.
Yeah.
And to have like a very overwrought, like, making the murder weapon scene with the trophy and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. The award, the excellence in surgery. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, very, you know, on the nose to have a weapon be made out of a surgery award that he was using to, destroy people's faces. A lot of
getting them right in the face.
Mutilation of the face. Just tonally, I agree. Like, it was very histrionic is good, very high, like hyper real. She screamed a lot, and there's a lot of those kind of intense sort of musical cues. Like, they have a whole conversation. So her sister comes to support her, who, again, we saw the actress that plays her. Oh my gosh, stop. Go back to my cast list here. What was her name? Sydney. Maddie. Mm-hmm. Hassan, who we saw in We Summon the Shadows.
Mm-hmm. We Summon the Darkness.
We Summon the Darkness. Yes, thank you. We Summon the Darkness.
What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows is something else.
We Summon the Darkness.
Yes.
Yeah.
What We Already Done Did in the Shadows is Summon the Darkness of the Shadows by the light of the full moon. That's the movie we're going to make.
Yes.
Every title we can squeeze in there. But so they think that they're sisters, and then, you know, you find out that she's adopted. And that part of the movie, I wanted to laugh out loud because she's like explaining this to her sister. So the Madison character is like, you know, I'm adopted. And there was like this musical cue that was like, bah! I was like, dun, dun, dun. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
There was a lot of that, though.
Cut to like, and it was just like,
there was a lot of like, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Which is also very giallo.
Yeah.
Very,
it felt, very much like lots of leading moments. So, yeah.
And the horrific, like, also, it just, like, that little bit of exposition just kind of came out of nowhere.
It was just strange. Yeah. I mean, I get that she wanted to, like, tell her, you know, and be like, you know, I'm actually adopted. And, like, I mean, it gave her this reason for wanting to have a child. Like, I want to have, like, you know, this blood
connection,
this, you know, blood relative. Also, probably, you know, those ideas of, like, having.
Yeah, but, like, you know, but fuck your drag. Like, you're my sister, but
right.
I want to be blood related to somebody.
Yeah. It was just very odd. And just the way that she, you know, I'm adopted. And the sister's eyes like widen, like, what, you know? I don't, and again, I have no idea how people emotionally react to news like that. You know, I don't know. I don't know if that is something, like, even nowadays, where, like, you know, if you find that out late in life, if you really would have, like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's possible. I don't know. I can't, like, speak. It was just very strange in the film. Like, it was just kind of, you know. I mean, I would get it if, like, you're an adult and your parents tell you you're adopted after, like, 30 years or something. Yeah, maybe you would have, like, so maybe it is the same for a sister. But it was just very, the whole sequence was really dramatic. And I did not understand, like, why it needed to be, have all the music and stuff around it. I did love, again, you know, you got somebody who's been attacked in their home, lost a baby, you know, so we got PTSD there. You know, she's very paranoid in the house, changing the locks. And, you know, I love people treating her like she's crazy after this. Like, you know, what are you doing in the doors? Like, why are you doing this? Like, I just had a really horrible experience, asshole. Like, You know, I felt like she was being very judged. I really felt for her. Like, you know, she's sitting in like in this like comatose state in the hospital, and like the detective's there, like, gotta ask you some questions. It was just very weird.
And like talking at her like she's not, yeah. You know, it was like, well, the doctor told me she had 3 miscarriages. And I was like, shut up, Keanu Reeves. Like,
right.
Oh, yeah. I kept calling him low rent Keanu Reeves and Keanu Wanda Reeves. Sykes.
Yeah. Yeah. She was good, though, the other detective. I liked her with her hoop earrings and her lollipop in the morgue. That was delightful.
This is how you know she had some edge. She was like a black woman with natural hair and hoop earrings and a lollipop.
That's true. I mean, that is very, like, they're just letting you know who she
is. It's a few decades shy of, like, letting Pam Grier play her, right?
Oh, that'd been awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I like this actress. I thought she was really great. And I had to enjoy... Yeah, her just standing there looking at this like mangled corpse. Like,
What did she call her? Wikipedia Brown.
Wikipedia Brown. That was hilarious, too. You know, I mean, a black woman, sassy character in a horror film. Like, really? Are we, you know, are we surprised?
But she, I mean, allegedly has not died.
That's true.
We don't know.
We don't know.
But allegedly has not died.
I hope that she's alive. And when they inevitably do, you know, 5 more of these movies, she is in all of them. Mm-hmm. And I want her to star. And I want her, you know, they're going to have like a dramatic scene where they show her scar, you know, so, you know, like she's been through it. Mm-hmm. She's tumbled with Gabriel and lived to tell the tale. Dear listener, hopefully you've watched the movie before you're listening to this, but Gabriel is the malignant of the title.
Yeah.
So Joshua,
why is it called Malignant? Let's just give it all away.
You know, and again, it's one of those things where the second they showed Gabriel, like the figure, and you really understood that he was walking like backwards, like the body was wrong, like his head was like twisted backwards. I was like, I know where this is going.
This is an Edward Mordrake.
I know exactly what's happening. Yeah, very Edward Mordrake. And then I actually just saw there was a note somewhere that's Bisou, Ingrid Bisou, one of the writers, was reading about like Edward Mordrake and, you know, fascinated with medical anomalies. And that helped inspire the character. But when I saw that of him like walking backwards and with the hair and the whole thing, I was like, I bet I know what's happening here.
Like, why does Gabriel have that bad wig?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's because Madison has that bad wig.
James Wan never met a bang he didn't like. Like he loves a good bangs on a lead.
There's a few of them in this film, and they trace back. It's how you knew. It's how you always can trace a character. Because obviously our hairstyles never change from like infancy to adulthood.
Yeah.
You know, so you keep it looking the same forever. And it's also hereditary. It's how we knew that the mom was the mom.
Yeah.
Because of the hair.
Are you saying bad hair is hereditary? I mean, I don't know if you're saying it's bad hair.
I'm not saying anything. I'm saying that the film posits that the mother passed on her haircut and her bangs to the children. To the children inhabiting the same body.
Yes.
So Gabriel's like a parasitic twin, malignant tumor kind of thing. That it's just awful. Like that whole sequence.
They also like give it away. I mean, like when you... They did a lot to make you forget that they gave it away in the first 5 minutes. So it's like, it's time to, what is it? It's time to cut the cancer out, or it's time to cut out the cancer.
Yeah. No, they definitely, it all like makes sense. But definitely when I saw the backwards walking, I went, oh shit, this is going
to
be
hard. It's time to cut those bangs. That's what this is actually supposed to be.
Yeah. If she had had like a shorter haircut, if she had went for something like punk rock, this would have all been over, you know? Well, maybe not. I guess because the way they show it, it's like they remove him from her. Because he's like, dear listener, again, hopefully you've seen it, but you know, he's like growing out of her back.
Oh, yeah. That reveal was the best because basically So in the film, they're watching like medical footage for on VHS. It's
on VHS.
It's her adoptive sister and mother. And then like when they show Gabriel as her parasitic twin growing like, you know, like Voldemort behind Professor Quirrell, which is what I thought it was.
Yeah.
The mother and the daughter have the same reaction that I did. They were like,
what? What?
What? So Gabriel is this malignant, like you said, is basically instead of Madison absorbing Gabriel as a twin in the body,
right?
They get fused.
Yeah, they're like fused, and he's, you know, horrifically deformed, and all of these.
They share
like,
the same
things.
Brain, and
yes, part. Yeah. They're like, yeah. It was just terrible, and I mean, it's like. The whole sequence of like them like removing him, like cutting him off of her kind of was really gross.
But also like, wouldn't you have some significant scarring from that?
Right? Yeah. They don't show any of that, you know, that maybe this is like,
I mean, she presumably fucked her husband like four times to get those babies. And I know that hair is not like all the way down her back, like covering all of those potential
scars. Because she was so young, you know, they kind of...
Or it was only in Missionary, so he never saw her back?
Maybe not. I don't know. Joe, you're giving it a lot more thought than I would have.
The more I think about it, the more I'm starting to not like it, so I'm going to stop thinking
you're
about
like,
it.
You're like, her whole back is scar tissue. Wouldn't you ask some questions? Yeah, it's quite possible. But then the whole thing of like they're like pushed his like face growing out of her skull. They like cut her skull open and like just pushed it up in there and covered it up. That was very strange. I know this is not a medical documentary film. That's for damn sure.
But like that whole like as the two things are happening, so as they're like talking about how they pushed Gabriel further into her brain, so that way they could let Madison live. She's like Gabriel's coming out in the prison cell,
yeah,
and is like the best scene of the entire film.
Yeah,
is like, and also like the women who were in
like
this
some
prison
X-Men shit all of a sudden.
Well, yeah, and the women who were in this prison cell was like every like every single cliche of women in a prison in a jail cell.
Yeah,
it was like butch lesbian haircut a la Zoe Bell.
Right,
it was chola eyebrows. It was like a Foxy Cleopatra type character.
Yeah, there was like a black woman with an afro and like tiger print.
And like tiger print, bell bottom, like jumpsuit with chains. I was like, where the fuck are we?
Yeah, it was very odd. There was just a lot of odd choices that I'm just like, I'm not sure what's happening. Again, I don't know if I liked it or not. I know right now I don't have a desire to watch it again. I was hoping it was going to be something different, I guess. Maybe I just, again, I kept seeing the Giallo thing. I do really love Suspiria. I've talked about how much I love the remake. And even Suspiria itself is not like some great masterpiece of like, it's like a fever dream.
Yeah. You know?
And a lot of Giallo films are. They're not necessarily coherent, amazing stories. You know, they're just sometimes are about, you know, style and
this one I
pushing.
Think was really trying to shoehorn like a plot, because that's the one thing I don't like about Giallo and like that didn't like about Suspiria and Inferno was the fact that like we didn't know what was and it was not real.
Yeah.
And in this one it's like it's definitely rooted in reality, but it's like fantastical.
Yeah, it was super strange. So, I think it's going to probably, you know, be something to think about for a little bit. I definitely recommend a watch of it. It was fun. I agree with you there. It was fun. There were definitely some sequences in it that I was like, what? Okay, that's cool. I love the visual, again, the visual element of the way. As we discover, it's because because they share a brain, he's able to, like, kind of play mind tricks on her where she thinks that she's, like, living... Like, he's able to create reality for her while he takes over her body, kind of putting her almost in, like, stasis and in, like, almost like a coma-like sleep, but where she thinks she's...
She thinks that she's watching it.
She thinks she's in reality. And that she's watching it. And so, like, those sequences were super cool. You know, again, the melting.
It's very, like, Tyler Durden, very Fight Club.
Fight Club, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I definitely enjoyed pieces of it. You know, I'm not going to rush to watch it again like I felt after, like, you know, Candyman, or after, mm-hmm. like, you know, other, like, newer films we've watched where I'm like, oh, gosh, I want to see that again right away. This, you know, it just, it had a lot going on. It had, like, you know, parasitic twins. It, like, turned into The Ring for a second, where it's like, oh, we got to go to the basement of some abandoned hospital and find records and watch tapes.
Well, it also turned into The Ring because it's got, like, again, that unfortunate, like, long haircut.
Right, and the video sequence is very, like, in that realm, yes, like
when they took her
things.
Picture, it was like pose like you're being sex trafficked. Like,
yeah, it was very creepy.
Yeah, it was just yeah.
So the whole thing, it was just a strange amalgamation of a lot of different ideas into like a really horrific nightmare.
Mm-hmm. But that it just ended. Fun.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was fun. I have no doubt we'll get sequels. Something. They'll find some way if this makes any money.
Malignant 2, still ignorant.
Joe, don't take the black pill. Don't do it. Don't. I think we know the answer to what.
Well, here's the irony of it. I'll take it and I'll get famous, and you'll take it and you'll, you know, suck the blood out of bunnies. That's what you'll do.
You're probably right. Because I bet you Still Ignorant would sell just fine in this audience, this world.
Malignant 2 is still ignorant.
Oh my gosh. Lord help me.
Maligned.
Why do we do this?
At this point, Joshua's twin is dissociating him from this body.
Yeah. Yeah, while I bash you to death with a living dead doll. Alrighty. So fun. Good times.
He can't say anything. He just doesn't know what to say.
All right. Well, that was our thoughts on Malignant, dear listener. Hope that, you know, you check it out and you enjoy it. Or, I, you know what? I would definitely get a group of people together with some popcorn. You know, have fun. Have a little movie night. And then watch, I don't know. What'd be a good movie to pair with this, Joe?
To pair with this?
Yeah, like a better movie.
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
That's true. You're right. Well, yeah, because you were talking earlier about that's Professor right, with Voldemort and
Harry Potter. You could watch the Edward Mordrake episodes of
American Horror Story. Yeah. You know,
like Gods and Monsters, little Jim Morrison.
Yeah. Those are
I mean, you're
good.
Also looking. What's some other?
Well, I'm just trying to think. Are there any other, like, is there a good parasitic twin horror film? I'm sure there is. Somebody's like screaming right now, like a very obvious one that I'm not thinking of.
Isn't there a movie called Brain Dead or something where there is like a little brain that's right here?
Oh,
because didn't Scott Roger have that? Didn't he do a cosplay of that?
I think so.
God, I don't know. I mean, if anything, I would do like a film festival of horror with that unfortunate haircut. So it'd be like The Ring and The Grudge and Annabelle and all of those unfortunate haircuts.
What was the there was a movie that somebody kept suggesting about like twins, or they were like doctors or something. Shit, I can't remember. Damn it. Either way, Basket Case, that could be delightful to watch with this, actually. That would make a really fun, like, you know, creepy horror night. Alrighty. Well, super fun. I'm glad that we got to get together and watch another film mm-hmm. together, actually in person, mm-hmm. and record here in the West Craven Memorial Library.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you bangs after this.
Oh, awesome. I'm so excited. All right. Good night.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davy Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.